She doesn't care. I mean, that's the thing. The cool aunt is unconventional. She is not following all the rules that society has for women. Like, oh, you need to be submissive and pure and have 2.5 children and bake pies or whatever it is our society thinks women should be doing at this minute. And yeah, she's doing her thing. She's doing her thing.
This is Unladylike. I'm Kristen. Last week on the podcast, we covered the cool mom, her parenting style, what she looks like in pop culture and real life. This episode, we are shifting our cool gaze to her sister, the cool aunt. The cool aunt figure possesses the likability the cool mom craves and without all the motherhood baggage. I mean, I think it's pretty self-evident why we do love a cool aunt. But also, though, is she cool because we assume she's rich? And of all the various aunt tropes, you know, your spinster aunts, your sinister aunts, your weird aunts, witchy aunts, why is the cool aunt really doing her thing right now? Is she perhaps the foil we need to hashtag tradwife life? A cool aunt herself, Carolina Miranda, recently went looking for those answers. And on ladies, when I say Carolina is a cool aunt, for one thing, she's the art and design columnist at the Los Angeles Times, which, hello, does a job title get more cool aunt than that? But even over Zoom, y'all, Carolina just radiated cool aunt. And she was not wearing any thick-framed statement glasses. I know.
I feel like culture tells us about everything in our society. If you want to know about politics, if you want to know about spirituality, if you want to know about gender, if you want to know about everything, you will find it in art.
Everything, including the cool aunt. Or aunt. Who says aunt? Who says aunt? So what image comes to mind when you hear cool aunt?
Oh, wow. When I hear cool aunt, I think of a person first. And I think of an aunt of mine in Chile who, she's a psychiatrist, so a professional woman. And she had this incredibly cool studio where she would do sessions. And when we were kids, she would let us play in that studio and take all the cushions and build a fort and do stuff. And she'd be there like one of the kids playing with us. And it was really this sense of this slightly permissive, adventurous, kind of bohemian, intellectually self-possessed woman. And so I think of my tia Adrianita, and I think of aunts I'm related to and not, who have kind of served that role over my life and for other people. And I think a role that I've served for some young people of giving a window into another possibility, into another way of being. And I think that does kind of exist across culture.
I'm also just wondering, with this aunt in Chile, did she have any kind of distinctive personal style?
Oh, yeah. Very long hair. I remember her having like a slightly boho style. Like, I always felt like as a kid, this was a stylish woman who had like a unique sense of style. And that is certainly, I think, part of the air, the mystique of the cool aunt, is that they also have this air about them. Even if it's not like high fashion, this just very self-possessed and unique sense of style.
So what got you thinking about the figure of the cool aunt in pop culture?
You know, I totally got into the cool aunt because I was wasting time on TikTok. Just sometimes in the evenings to let my brain rest from the day, I'll just go through TikTok and see what's happening. And it happened to be over the holidays. And a lot of people, you know, they're home for the holidays with their family. And so they're making memes about the holidays, being with their family, their mom yelling in the kitchen as they make dinner. And I just happened to start getting, and you know how the algorithm is, like you like one thing and then you start getting 100 more, all of these memes related to cool aunts. And so people imitating, like, here's my aunt at Christmas. And, you know, the aunt with the giant sunglasses and the big handbag posing in front of the Christmas tree, or sitting there with her big glass of wine, or dancing to some music in the living room. And I just, like, I love the image of the cool aunt. It's certainly something I aspire to personally. But it really struck me that at the same time that I'm getting these memes, I'm also getting reports about, like, restrictions to abortion. I had just read a big story in the New Yorker about a young woman who died from a very dangerous pregnancy because medical abortion was not an option. Like, nobody ever raised the issue of a medical abortion. You know, this is a woman who would have, obviously she didn't survive. She wasn't able to carry her child to term. And as I'm reading these stories about women losing autonomy over their bodies, I'm seeing these memes online in which people are imitating, making fun of, but also celebrating, you know, the cool aunt that like bends convention and gender expectation. And that really got me thinking about, why is this figure popping up right now? Why does it have such currency? I'm watching zillennials and, you know, millennials like imitating the cool aunt. And it really, at this very fraught time for women. I mean, we're sitting here a day after like Alabama says that embryos are children that need to be preserved. And that duality really just struck me as really interesting about like why this figure would have so much currency right now. So I started digging around, and there had been a lot of stories about cool aunts, mostly about attempts to market to them. Mm-hmm. But I was really struck by the sociology of it. And so that's essentially what started the story.
Unladies, Carolina reported that story out for the LA Times in early February. It's headlined, "How the Cool Aunties of Pop Culture Flout the Growing Restrictions Imposed on Women." As soon as I read it, I knew Carolina was the cool aunt we needed to hear from.
One of the people I spoke to of this story is Patty Soterin. She's a sociologist or media studies professor from Michigan. And she wrote a book called Where the Aunts Are. And she breaks that down, these like different archetypes that fit within the cool aunt bucket, if you will. And so it might be that wild aunt. It might be the rule breaking aunt. She has a whole chapter where she looks at the aunt in Black culture, which has a much more complicated legacy. I didn't get into this in my story. It's been written about by other writers. In the 19th century, in the era of slavery, sometimes Black women who were caregivers to white children would be referred to as the aunt, you know, as this way of erasing the slave labor relationship. And so an informal aunt in Black culture can be a much more complicated thing than in Latino culture or white culture, depending on your race. But I think in terms of the sort of the aunt and the cool mom, cool moms exist in all cultures. But I also think that motherhood is, it's more fraught. You know, we as a culture judge mothers a lot. And I think what the aunt does is she's not judged by those standards. Like, if you're hanging out with your aunt and you're wearing some, I don't know, raggedy sweatshirt or listening to loud music, it's like you're with your aunt. It's like, we're not going to judge her in the same way. And I think that does kind of exist across culture.
Is she necessarily rich and or child free?
No, the answer is no. She's not necessarily rich and she's not necessarily child free. You know, there's all these names for the cool aunt. There's the cool aunt, the wild aunt, the savvy aunt, the tia cool in Spanish, the rich auntie, the rich Black auntie. You know, there's all these like different cultural permutations of the aunt across different races and ethnicities. And I think part of the reason the stereotype of the rich auntie comes up is because oftentimes it might be a single woman or a married woman with no children. And when you don't have children, you tend to have more disposable income. So I think maybe relatively rich might be the better description. Maybe she has that disposable income to go on a big vacation because she's not raising children. But I think the cool aunt and the sort of nurturing role that cool aunts play, it's not limited to single women, and it's not limited to women who are childless. My tía Adrianita, who was sort of my cool, I saw as the cool aunt, she had kids. She had a bunch of kids. But for us, she played that role. So I think there have been marketing-wise these attempts to kind of narrow what the cool aunt is, like a professional aunt, no kids, disposable income, let's sell her things, t-shirts that say rich auntie or whatever.
Side note on ladies, Carolina is so right about the marketing of it all. Take PANK, okay? Professional aunt, no kids. PANK. The acronym was coined by Melanie Notkin, who also started the website Savvy Auntie, okay? And Melanie, a savvy auntie herself, also an entrepreneur and marketer. So making PANK happen was Melanie's way of kind of repackaging the child-free salaried aunt in order to sell her to advertisers. And honestly, it's exactly what a PANK would do. Very girl bossy, that PANK.
The category of the cool aunt, it's much more flexible. It's a little bit more fungible. It speaks to the family, the sort of the flexible nature of family structures. We think of families as like mom, dad, 2.5 kids. But the fact is, families don't operate like that. Extended family members often play a role in assisting, say, with childcare or other issues. And the cool aunt, I think there's fuzzier boundaries to who she is, depending on who you are and the relationships you have to her. So I think to narrow her down to like the single lady who happens to have disposable income completely obscures all the other women who are serving this role to young people in really critical ways. One of the things I write about in the story about how for like a lot of queer teens, an aunt figure can be really critical. Like if your parents are not accepting of who you are, the aunt might be. And the aunt might offer you emotional support. Aunts can be a source of housing for teens who find themselves homeless or struggling at home as a result of being queer. Like the aunt can offer that kind of material support. So I'm very hesitant to think of the cool aunt as a market segment. Like I think she's much broader and much more powerful than a t-shirt, you know?
Before reading your piece, I had not even put the figure of trad wife and cool aunt kind of in the same conversation.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This is really my algorithm talking to me. I had been following the trad wife phenomenon primarily by reading essays about it. I mean, I had been looking at some trad wife content on TikTok, not a lot of it because it just drives me a little crazy, mainly because there's an aspect of it that seems so unreal. It's like, I'm going to sit here and tell you about how to be a traditional wife in full makeup with my hair done on a media platform on what essentially is a job.
Yeah, they're influencers.
We can make fun of influencing, but it's a job. It's work. Like these women get dressed up and they go to work. And that's what it is. And so I feel like the trad wife phenomenon completely glosses over the labor that goes into certainly producing trad wife content. And so I have been following and I've been low-key lurking trad wife content for a while. And it really struck me like the trad wife phenomenon has gotten like a lot of ink in the media. There's been essays about it and TikToks in response to TikToks and TikToks about those TikToks. And, you know, there's like this whole echo chamber of tradwife, but I'm like, there's this whole cool aunt thing going on. And we're not really like, we're treating it as a cute meme, And it, I mean, it's done jokingly. Like a lot of that trad wife content is very earnest in the way that it's presented. Like the cool aunt is presented more as like funny, as a meme, as hilarious. You do have women who go on and talk about being the cool aunt in a straightforward way. But I was like, these are just two kind of opposing archetypes on social media of like, you have women literally saying, I will submit to my husband's will. And then you have like cool aunts who are like, fuck it, I don't need kids, I'm traveling. You know, like, you know, like I'm out, heading to Paris. And that is those two things existing at the same time were just interesting to me. So,
well, it reflects a lot about where we are right now, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. It really does.
Have you also seen the cool aunt counter narratives that have emerged? Like, there was one essay I read by a queer person that was talking about how they used to really embrace the label cool aunt. Now they reject it because it feels more like a form of queer erasure for them. There was another one that I saw from a different perspective that was like, don't call me a cool aunt because I don't want to be around kids ever. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I have seen, I think I have read those essays. I know exactly which ones you're talking about. I think, yeah, the cool aunts, as I said before, come in all shapes and forms and subcategories. It is true that sometimes, in some cases, the cool aunt label is a way of disguising that she's a lesbian aunt. And maybe we're not dealing with that, that she doesn't have kids because maybe that was just not a possibility at that time. I think things have changed a lot in that regard. But I think part of the focusing the cool aunt so much on the whole, and I try to use the term cool aunt and not rich aunt, because I think rich aunt really reduces her to her acquisitiveness. Like, what can she buy? What is she wearing? What makeup is she doing? What fabulous trip is she taking? And in my view, that's acquisitiveness. That's not necessarily cool aunting. I see cool aunting as serving, and the cool aunt is defined in relationship to a niece or nephew. That's why you're the aunt. I mean, if somebody doesn't want to be an aunt, they don't want to be around kids whatsoever, more power to them. I don't have children. I don't mind children in small doses. I would not want to be around them consistently. So I feel the vibe, but I also do play this role with some young people in my life, in my family and not in my family, of just, they're going to get advice from me that they might not get from their parents, or they're going to see me do things that maybe their parents don't do. Like, I'm a writer. I get to do like certain things that, I guess, if you're a teenager, feel kind of adventurous and go places and write about it. For me, the cool aunt relationship is about that. It's what kind of possibilities are you offering a young person that maybe they wouldn't have in front of them otherwise? And I do appreciate the critical essays because, like I said, I think these terms can erase a lot. As I said, in the case of Black women, like the term aunt can be very freighted. It's really embraced by some Black women and it's really not embraced by others. And there's been some terrific essays in the New York Times and the Atlantic about that. So yes, we need to be very conscientious that you can't use two words to define like half the population, basically.
Thank goodness. Like, yeah, how boring things would be.
But yeah, she is a fascinating, and it's really interesting to me because as part of the story, you know, I was doing research into aunts in popular culture. And sometimes like you have the Harry Potter aunt who is the mean aunt. She's the cruel aunt. She's not the cool aunt whatsoever. And, you know, I feel like there are these figures that could be like they fit the cool aunt archetype. Like you think of Aunt Viv on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like she had kids, she was married, but there was something about her that was a cool aunt. She was professional. She was taking dance classes. You know, there's like that famous episode where she does a whole dance routine in this like skin tight leotard and basically like kicks everybody's ass in the dance class.
Auditions usually require dance training. You haven't been to any classes.
Unless you count Lamaze. Well, actually, I've been taking private instruction with Natalia Broshkova.
The dancer?
No, the obstetrician.
I think of Cookie Lyons on Empire as like a cool aunt.
And God, please do not withhold your blessings, even from hoes that hire skanks to spy on me. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Hallelujah.
Only in recent years have I come to realize that for me personally, the formative cool aunt in my life is a fictional aunt, and that is Auntie Mame.
Legendary, the auntie of all aunties.
Live, that's the message.
Live.
Yes, life is a banquet, and most poor suckers are starving to death. Come on now, child, live. Live. Let's go and live.
She fits the archetype of the cool aunt to a T. She's bohemian. She has these like crazy friends. She throws these crazy parties. She's drinking cocktails for breakfast. She's teaching her 10-year-old nephew how to stir a martini. It's like she is, to an extreme version, the cool of the coolest aunts. Of course, she's rich, so it's easy to be very that bohemian and that cool when you're floating in money. But, you know, it's so interesting that you mentioned how resonant Auntie Mame was, because I feel like we're due for another big cool aunt movie. Like, I need some epic cool aunt content on the big screen.
Yeah, I mean, God help us, all we see are remakes and reboots, but I would watch a reboot of Auntie Mame.
I know, right? You know, this is a movie that was made, I think it's like 1958. It was like late 50s. And when you think about it, I mean, Auntie Mame offers a really interesting parallel to right now, this moment in which the traditional wife, the trad wife phenomenon has picked up steam. We are putting limits on women's bodily autonomy. I mean, the 1950s offer a real parallel in terms of like real constriction on the expectations placed on women. Like, you'd had World War II, in which women were working in factories. They were doing this. They were serving in the military. And then all of a sudden, the expectation is you're going to be in like your beautiful dress, taking care of the home and taking care of the kids. And that's it. And it was a moment in which women were extraordinarily constricted socially. And so for somebody to make a movie about this wild, I mean, she's having a sidecar for breakfast. Her butler asks her, like, what would you like for breakfast? She's like, oh, just a light breakfast, some coffee and a sidecar or something like that. It's like, I mean, that is a completely convention busting in the context of that era. That is huge. That is huge. And I think to some degree offers this really interesting parallel to now.
As a cool aunt, I would like to know from you any advice you have for listeners or, say, podcast hosts who aspire to be the cool aunt. How do you kind of plant your flag, you know, so that the kids do come to you for advice or whatnot?
I think one of the things I've seen just in terms of my research and in terms of the relationships I have is a certain sense that the cool aunt, the reason you're going to her is that she's not going to judge you, that maybe your parents are going to judge you. You might have a question about sex that you were just way too embarrassed to ask your mother or father, but you might ask the cool aunt. And why does that happen? And the sense is that the cool aunt isn't going to judge you if you ask the question, whereas your parents might be like, why are you asking this question? Are you having sex? You know, like, whereas the aunt is going to be like, all right, well, let's talk about it. And I think that really, and when you think about the relationship, the critical relationship that aunts play for queer, can play for queer teens, it's that same sense, like, I am not going to judge you because of who you are. And instead, I'm going to hear you out. And I think it's that sense that the cool aunt will treat you like an adult. They're still the elder, but that they're gonna take your concerns seriously. And, you know, in some cases, offer that emotional support. You know, I think of, I have a good friend who helps. She has a niece whose parents are a little bit checked out. They have their own troubles. And when I think of, all relationships are highly individualized, so it's hard to offer any kind of blanket advice. I think she is just someone who hears out her niece's issues and listens to her non-judgmentally and provides advice, like moral support and emotional support. And sometimes, again, material support, like, why don't you come spend the weekend at my house? We can hang out. That kind of refuge that sometimes kids who live, say, in a troubled home might need. So I think there's no recipe. Part of what's interesting to me about all of these attempts to kind of market to the cool aunt, as I feel, or they're like, all this talk about, like, oh, this community of cool aunts that come together. And my feeling on the cool aunt is the cool aunt is like a convention breaker. Like, she's not a group joiner. You know? Like, the archetype doesn't really fit. Like, I'm going to join a website and talk about cool aunting with people. Like, because everyone does it in their own way. And it's formed by their own personal relationships and worldviews and spiritual views, religious views. It can all be shaped by that. But I think at the base of it is this person who's not going to judge you, who's not going to judge you,
mm-hmm.
and who's going to take your concerns seriously. And sometimes when you're a teenager, those concerns might be a little silly, but it's still that feeling of, here's this person that is not judging me for this.
Absolutely. Well, is there anything about aunts, cool or otherwise, that you want to make sure listeners know?
I mean, I feel like in recent years, over the last decade, the whole cool aunt thing has become so about, like, this market segment that we can reach. And I really think at the end of the day, the cool aunt is defined by the relationships that she has and the support that she has. And I think it also speaks to, there's a study I link to in my story about the way families operate and our very unrealistic perception of how they should operate. We live in a society, in Western society, that it's like the mom, the dad, the kids, and that is the family structure. And those are the people that provide childcare. And those are the people that raise children, and they do it together. And that's how it's done. When in reality, this sociological study looked across societies, child rearing is infinitely more complicated, and there are all of these relationships that you develop with cousins, with neighbors, with grandparents, with people who have a role in raising you, that really raising children is a communal activity. It's not just mom and dad, and in many cases, just mom. We see mom as the child rearer. And I think what the aunt does is the cool aunt reintroduces some complexity into the idea of child rearing, that it is not just the mom and dad alone, or it's not just the mom alone, because there are a lot of single moms who raise children, but it is this web of relationships that you establish, and that as a parent or as a child, sometimes children seek out these relationships very intentionally. And so I think it's important to keep that in mind, that we have this very reductive view of what child rearing in a family is. And what aunts remind us of is that actually it's infinitely more complicated, and we all maybe have a role to play. Maybe it's a very small role. Maybe it's just saying, I'm going to take you out shopping and buy you ice cream, or I'm going to hear out your problem, or I'm going to let you stay at my house for a weekend if you're having trouble at home. Like, there are all of these roles to be played, and they can all be really important, even if they're very small.
Unladies, what do y'all think about the cool aunt? I know there are stories. I know there are thoughts. Please share voice memos, emails, DMs. You can email me at hello@unladylike.co or DM me on Instagram @unladylikemedia. Thank you so much to Carolina Miranda. You have got to go read her column at the Los Angeles Times, How the Cool Aunties of Pop Culture Flout the Growing Restrictions Imposed on Women. You can follow Carolina on Instagram and Threads at CMonstaH. That's CMONSTAH. And if you want to go deeper on anthood, Carolina highly recommends a book by Patricia J. Satirin called Where the Ants Are: Family, Feminism, and Kinship in Popular Culture. And right now in the Unladies Room Patreon, you can listen to the latest bonus episode that is all about what the fuck went down at the Alabama Supreme Court and those frozen embryos, and also why this growing political conversation around quote unquote saving IVF is leaving a real big loophole for anti-abortionists. For $5 a month, you can join, listen, help support this independent podcast. And hey, thank you. Unladylike is an Unladylike Media production, executive produced, written, edited, and hosted by me, Kristen Conger. Engineering is by Amita Ganatra. Our music is by Flamingo Shadow, Amit May Cohen, and Sarah Tudson. Until next week, what is the most unladylike thing about you?
Oh my God. The most unladylike thing about me, probably the way I sit. I still have my mother's words echoing in my ears, like, sit like a lady. She was always like, in Spanish, siéntate como señorita. And I'd be like slouching in my jeans with like my leg, you know, hanging over the edge of the couch. So yeah, I have never given in to the ladylike sitting. I still sit in wildly unladylike ways, and I am completely here for it. I will be the cool aunt who will encourage your sitting in your jeans sprawled all over the place.
Sprawling aunt.
I'm all about the sprawl.